Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comic Extension. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Cole Hornaday.
Hey there.
Chris Casso.
Hello.
And, of course, Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
How is everybody this fine evening?
Doing all right.
What's more of a feeling, friends?
Doing great. How are you?
Yay!
Hey.
Well, we're back at the table after a while away, and a few things have happened. One of the things that caught my eye is a company called Insight Comics. Insight Comics is going to be publishing a book, a biography of David Bowie's early life. It's caught my eye because everybody's, of course, is a big David Bowie fan. It's called Bowie, Stardust, Ray Guns, and Moon Age Dreams. And it's going to be by Mike Allred and Steve Horton, with colors from Laura Allred, assisted by Han Allred. Those Allreds are just all over the place.
They are.
Clan Allred is here.
Yeah, it's pretty
Clan
much it is.
Allred.
Yeah.
This is Mike Allred's magnum opus.
Yeah. He basically already kind of did it with Red Rocket 7.
Yeah, but Red Rocket 7, he could only do so much without getting into trouble. And Red Rocket 7 was an interesting project because it was the comic, it was a short film, and his band, I can't remember the name of the band.
It was True Multimedia.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting, but having been a fan already as long as I have, I felt I needed to engage, and it didn't engage me. So I'm really looking forward to this. This is the passion project I think he's been really, really looking forward to do all of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got his whole... I think he has his family involved in most of his current projects anymore, right?
Pretty much.
Laura's always been his colorist, but he's got his... I think it's his eldest son involved. I'm really looking forward to this book, being the Bowie fan that I grew up to be.
Yeah, apparently David Bowie was familiar with Red Rocket 7, mm-hmm. and a line from his song New Killer Star was, quote, "See my life in a comic." You don't know if it's a reference to what Mike Allred did, but Mike Allred seems to believe that was...
I'd buy it.
A reference.
Decent chance.
I'd totally buy it.
Yeah. So look for this hitting the shelves sometime soon. I don't think there's a specific release date.
We have a date on Diamond of January 8th of 2020.
All right. Mm-hmm. So coming up.
So maybe that's real.
I was having trouble figuring out how to order it because I'm like, that'll sell. And then I looked at the price. I'm like,
how much is it?
A little hard for me. So yeah.
What is it? 40,
it's $40.
Yeah, 40
wow.
bucks. Which, you know, not terrible, but is just, you know, we have to figure out how long we're going to sit on inventory in the store.
Right.
So yeah.
It's 8x11. So it's a little, it's the size of a piece of paper, pretty much. It's 160 pages. So
yeah.
So yeah, it's not quite as thick as you'd want for $40,
yeah.
but with the Allred art, like, if you like that.
Can I beat somebody to death with it? I don't know.
I don't think so. Well, it is a hardcover.
Oh, yeah, that's how I judge. Huh?
It's a hardcover.
It is a hardcover, so if you really mean it.
Like maybe a corner or something.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
My dad has this Harley Davidson book, because he was into Harleys for a while, and... And this book, it was like, you know, a retrospective of like the history of the company, all the past motorcycles. And it was a heavy freaking book. And I'm like, did they put lead inside the cover of this thing? I think they did, just to make it feel
heavier.
That's
just ink and glossy pages that equates to lead.
No, Nicole, it was made to deflect bullets.
Yeah, actually, if you put that in front of a gun, you might actually survive.
As long as you have great reflexes.
That's right.
First, you have to lift it to save your life.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Well, it has been a while since we've been around the microphones, and a number of notable passings have occurred. First off, Tom Spurgeon, a comics reporter, passed away at the age of 50.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
a lot of people are of course mourning it, but he was a really influential reporter in the industry, wasn't he?
He was the core source of my news for like the past 10, 15 years almost. So it's one of those things that there's a noticeable gap on the online comics journalism community,
because
most of the other sources are terrible. And he was somebody who gave like a broad scope on everything. You know, I mean, he would report on cartoonists in the Middle East being put into prison, and then he would turn around and talk about some corporate Marvel thing. Then he'd turn around and talk about an indie thing over in Seattle or whatever. So it's just, it came as a shock because he did have some previous health issues, but he's still pretty young.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's, his website's pretty much archived now. No one's going to try and continue it. I noticed somebody on the Comics Journal website before he passed away was kind of starting to do his own version of it. So it's like, we got some people that are going to try and do something similar where they just try to catch as many different beats of news as you can. But yeah, it actually is a big deal.
Yeah.
Sorry, that sounded weird.
It's a big loss.
It's a big loss. Yeah.
Gahan Wilson also passed away. He's described as a macabre cartoonist. He was 89. It was announced on his family's GoFundMe page, which I thought was an interesting detail. Apparently, he had had some health issues. His wife had passed away in March. And they had been living together. He was married to Nancy Winters from from 1966 until her death in March. He was diagnosed with dementia and had been living with her in an assisted living facility in Arizona until her death, which required his family to try to raise the funds to take care of him.
I see.
But I will be honest, I did not know of him before he passed away. My news feeds were flooded.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, he was, you know, there's a handful of like single panel macabre artists that, you know, are from the gory school of macabre cartoonists along with, Charles Adams, stuff like that. But Wilson was, cover it was all over the place, like an Epic Illustrated and then, you know, be in a anthology horror comic, and then be in The New Yorker or something like that. Yeah. Just all over the place.
He's also credited with Playboy and National Lampoon magazine.
Right.
Yeah, it's one of those things where the name didn't initially hit me, and then once I saw his art style, it's like, oh, I've seen him everywhere.
Right.
Somewhere in my childhood, I've seen him. So, yeah.
And finally, in notable passings, Tom Lyle has left us. He has a number of notable credits, and I would say them to you, but my my webpage is not pulling up.
He did a lot of Spider-Man work.
Right.
He's done work for DC and Marvel. He actually was a childhood favorite of mine because at that point in time, I was deep into Spider-Man, so I was familiar with his work. He had a very specific line style for people's faces and everything. So I don't recall him doing too much of the recent years, but it is sad to see this news.
He did work on Robin and Starman along with Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was during the era of like Maximum Carnage
and
Clone Saga. So I was deep into that area. And even though I hated those stories, I remember his artwork being like, oh, at least that's clean and tight. That's great.
Right. He was relatively young, only at 66. So rest in peace, Tom Lyle. And that is all the sad news that we're going to be talking about today. The classic French comic Asterisk is going to come to the U.S. officially in 2020.
What does that even mean, though? Because they've been printing the volumes in the States
for years.
Yeah,
we've had them in the States, so I think it's
just that the licensing has now gone to paper cuts from what the article said, and now they are taking it upon themselves to do like new translations and fresh printings of both old and some of the
But there's going to be
material.
New material, because I thought a couple of months ago they announced that they were going to introduce their first female protagonist to the Asterix ensemble. Was that right?
Yeah, just like a month ago, I think they mentioned that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Got it.
It's about time. I've had people asking.
I get it periodically, and it's just so much material to try to stock, and I think it's been somewhat inconsistent in print, but mostly it's a lot. It's like 38 volumes or something. It's just like, I don't know about that.
Wow.
Which volume do you want me to get for you?
Yeah.
All of them?
I remember for a while I could maybe get like some Spanish editions and some other editions. Mm. It's just like we always had to bounce around and kind of scrape to try and get like a run of any of them.
Right.
So it is nice to hear that it's going to be hopefully be a consistent release thing that I can reorder for our old ages section.
Yeah. This is 4 omnibus editions per year with each new album released in the U.S. to accompany its European release on a biannual basis.
Nice.
So they got a plan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it looks like they got it all mapped out. So something to look forward to if you've been trying to find some asterisks with no avail. I don't know what's the word.
That's right.
Sure.
To no avail.
Great.
That's an interesting something I've always worried about. I'm terribly worried about
just
it.
Just staying up at night.
I've wondered about it. When you do a translation of a comic, do you have to put your translation inside the already established word bubbles?
Yes.
Yeah. That gets whited out, and you.
Yeah.
Put the translation over.
So you just have to fit everything in there or make it look natural.
Yeah.
Yep, that's part of the job of translating it. It's a little bit like dubbing. It's like, you got to squeeze all this dialogue into the lip flaps of so many seconds at a time.
I'm reading Mobile Suit Gundam, The Origin, and they have some weird balloon placements. And weird splits of the American language in there. And it's just like, oh, you just had to do what you could do there.
Yeah.
Because I'll be looking at a page and I'm like, what is he saying? Oh!
I feel it's even harder with something that has totally different characters and alphabet and ways of doing things. Because they're more concise than the Roman, Latin, whatever we are. I'm approximately speaking English.
Yes.
Welcome to the club.
Hello. Yes. So it's a challenge.
Yes.
Yeah.
Words am hard.
I couldn't have said it better.
All right. Back in 2016, Scholastic had a graphic novel talent hunt. It was a contest to find up to 6 cartoonists with stories to tell for the kid and young adult focused graphics line. And the first one is going to hit print. It's called Trespassers by Brina Bard.
Mm-hmm.
Bard isn't a completely unknown author. She's got she has a book out called Hey Baby, a comic memoir about becoming a mom. Mm-hmm. In May of 2020, this new comic called Trespassers is going to hit the shelves from Scholastic.
It's I'm having like weird time differentiation issues because like they won in 2016, but it's not coming out till 2020. And I'm looking at the picture and she looks really young, so I'm like, what was she like 15 when she applied? Like, geez.
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows?
Maybe
who
she's
knows?
Just got them good jeans.
That's
because she
right.
is a mom and already wrote a book about it.
And she's wearing a jean jacket, so it's all
it's all about
now.
The jeans.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And there was a tweet from TNT Drama, which is, I guess, is connected to the channel, says, quote, tweet this with your most controversial Batman opinion, and it's Michael Keaton standing up in front of the bat signal. From, I guess, the second Tim Burton Batman movie. And Tom King, writer of Batman, says, O'Neill Adams, Englehart Rogers, and Frank Miller should be credited as creators of Batman. At this point, their contributions to who Batman is equal and maybe surpass Kane and Finger. Does he have a point about how different authors influence and grow and evolve characters?
He does, but it's not the same thing as creating a character.
No, it's, and what we've learned, because the comic books, the industry has been around for so many generations now, and we experience reboots and remounts and whatever, is that all of our characters, we can't really cling to them too hard because they're mercurial.
Yeah.
Depending on how, and every new writing team we've learned, maybe not every new, but so many of them want to put their stamp on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we saw that a lot in the 90s where they failed miserably in trying to put their stamps on so many characters. And, but yeah, I agree to a certain point of what he says, but, you know, it's kind of like it takes a lot of people to put a buffet together.
I agree with the content of what he wants to say, mm-hmm. but I think this is stupid.
Go for it.
This made me very, shut up, man.
Really?
Because mostly, so
rubbing
first of
his
all,
eyes.
Yeah. So first of all, like, there's got to be 500 other names you include, sure, because everybody's going to have an argument. Like, what about Greg Rucka? What about that guy? What about that guy? Mm-hmm. And then it's just like, there's not enough. That's 500 pages. then I could read my 22-page comic. Like, no, just you. If you're doing an adaptation, somebody, I think one of the creators, Fabian SCSCSL, whatever, I think he said it.
I liked his reply.
Yeah, where he's just like, if somebody's going to do an adaptation of a famous, like, Frank Miller story, give them credit for that.
Yeah.
But as far as the creation of the original core concept goes, we only got space for the two names.
Yep.
Just shut up and take it.
Yeah. I would, if you don't mind, I would like to read his tweet because it was like, yes. He said, you did say controversial. Hard disagree from me. The people who created the character created the character. The people who created seminal stories using the character should get credit when their stories are adapted into other media. Mm-hmm. So I think it is said really well. Like, yeah. I get what Tom King is trying to say.
It's a nice idea.
However, no.
Yes.
Thank you.
And it's really important, I think, to acknowledge when creators make a significant contribution to the direction of the character.
Yeah.
But I learned something really, really interesting last week from the Jim Shooter blog. And that was, for years we were told that the whole new way of looking at the Incredible Hulk as an abused child and his fragmented personality issues that contributed to his different Hulk personas were created by Bill Mantlo. This was not true. It was originally from a story pitch by Barry Windsor Smith, and Mantlo and Smith left. It was a graphic novel he was writing, drawing writing and illustrating. He left copies with Jim Shooter and Mantlo stole the ideas and incorporated them into the Hulk comics. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that was the most profound discovery made about the Incredible Hulk and its the evolution of that character.
Mm-hmm.
And to find out that, and then I've also learned since then that Bill Mantlo just has had no shame in stealing ideas. In fact, practicing blatant plagiarism.
Well, integrity is not a thing that the comics industry
really
is based
not.
Off of.
Yeah. But here's
so,
the cool thing that I discovered is that Barry Windsor Smith has been working on reworking this graphic novel called Monsters since 1985. This is all new information to me. Did you know about this?
I haven't heard about
that. That's a long time.
Yeah, I posted it on the... Yeah, and so he has posted excerpts.
Detailed artwork.
I mean, it's almost my entire life.
Cole's gonna shut up now.
Oh, no.
I just inadvertently bonked my knee
hurt
and
himself.
Just sort of killed that moment.
So sorry.
Successfully. Smith publishes panels every once in a while on his website.
Mm.
It's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating because it looks like it's an extraordinary book.
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps kicking the publication forward. I mean, he's been kicking it forward for, like, you know, Nicole's lifetime, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to be said about, you know, like, when there's new character designs and different things like that. Like, there's just no, doesn't seem to be any kickback to people who have created that kind of stuff.
Mm. And the bad thing, too, is that, okay, if you're going to have to start including more and more names, you essentially should just say everyone. That includes the horrible people.
Yeah.
The horrible ones.
Yeah.
Not even just the ones that told bad stories, but the ones we found out later that were racist or worse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, but you got to include them all because then you're being kind of a douche if you're excluding certain people. Like, let's not talk about Ed Brubaker's run. It's like, well, why not? You know?
Right.
So it's just like, nah, it's good idea, bad execution.
You just open the hornet's nest. Why do I keep trying to do idioms that I don't know how to do?
The can of stinky worms?
Yeah.
You rustled the jimmies.
It's a slippery slope. I love idioms, but I just don't know how to use them, guys. Wasn't there like an Archer episode about that where he was trying to do idioms the whole entire time?
My favorite is trying to milk a dead horse.
Milk a dead horse.
Oh, that's so gross.
It works too, because it really means that you're not gonna get what you want.
You're just gonna be living in the realm of disappointment.
Okay, moving on. Finally today, we're just talking about this because Cole posted this on the Panel Jumper Facebook page, and it did start a dialogue. Some people are excited about this. Channing Tatum is in talks to adapt The Max. Now, we don't know if that's going to be a movie or a TV show. It's still in the early stages, but people are excited about a live-action The Max.
Yeah, it's one of the weirdest things to try and adapt. Like, it's going to be a train wreck. It could be a great train wreck. I just want to see what kind of train wreck that's going to be.
I don't want to see what kind of train
wreck. Like a live action the, Max?
Like a CGI Max in the, what do they call it, the Outback?
Yeah. So yeah. Weird. Yeah. I mean, that MTV, back in the day, that MTV series adaptation was probably one of the best adaptations of a comic book ever.
Mm-hmm.
And they really didn't, they didn't sidestep a lot.
They had to just change legal characters because they couldn't have the Savage Dragon show
that's
up.
Right.
So,
And it's really, they re-released it on DVD a couple years ago.
The only way you could get it was a direct print from Amazon.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Basically, they would only print it if you ordered it. They didn't have a stock of them, so they would just make it for you. Yeah.
I still have them taped off MTV on VHS, and I don't even have a working VHS player anymore.
I had that, and I lent it out. And
Can you not?
Can you not watch? Is it not on any streaming services? Is it not available anywhere?
I remember us talking about the Liquid TV stuff a while ago on a podcast, and there was some like database that somebody
Put a bunch of it on YouTube as like one giant thing. Mm. Not on YouTube. It was something else.
Some database thing.
But then it disappeared. Like I posted it in the newsletter once, and then I think after a while it got taken down.
Darn.
Yeah. See, I remember that it's actually available on disc again. But you know, someone please out in PBP land, correct us.
Yeah, if you know how to watch the old Max cartoons from 1995.
Well, better yet, if you have a working VCR.
I have a working VCR.
I do.
I think you could still get the DVD.
Bring your tape over.
Okay,
I'll digitize it for you.
All right, let's do that. Okay, I think we have a plan.
We'll commit copyright fraud.
I just hope that all the episodes are on it. I think they are.
All right, well, we'll find that out at a later date. That is all the news we're going to talk about today. Let's move on to Book Report, everybody. And Cole Hornaday, let's start with you.
Well, I picked up issue number one of Far Sector from DC's Young Animal line. When I originally read about this, I didn't hold a lot of excitement. Far Sector is written by N.K. Jemisin and Jamal Campbell. It's a 12-issue maxi series that's part of the DC Young Animal line, but it's a Green Lantern series. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't understand how this is supposed to work. Do we worry about continuity anymore? I don't know.
Nah.
But then I read an interview with Jemisin, and I was like, I really like what this woman is talking about. Also, I think it's offering things that I've been hungry for a very long time.
There's a hunger inside you.
There was a hunger inside me, like a wolf. So basically, the story is of Green Lantern. She's like a freshman Green Lantern. She's not a rookie. Her name is Sojourner Joe Mullane. I mean, when you give a spacefaring character the name Sojourner, I'm kind of in all the way.
That's some good 80s sci-fi there.
Yeah, it really is. And so, but she's black. And, you know, she's on this, it starts out and she's on this solo mission to a really, really, a very different alien culture to help solve a mystery where death, murder, and violence don't happen. I think death does. But, and I'm starting to, it's brilliantly illustrated by Campbell. And as I'm reading it, I'm going, this is what the Jon Stewart Mosaic stories were trying to be back in the 90s. And this is our answer to that story of a superhero who is othered, who's an othered person of color, going to other cultures and as an outsider trying to bring the in groups of that community together to solve a problem. And I'm hoping it's not going to be just this story, all 12 issues. I'm hoping that they are individual vignettes where she is solving and learning more things about herself through the process. But
maybe this is just the first three issues or something like that.
Yeah. Because I have, even though it's problematic, I do have fond memories of those Jon Stewart stories, and we just haven't had a character in either, to my knowledge, from the Marvel or DC universe that is a person of color that is addressing being othered from within and from without of our culture. And that's what I see happening here. And it's really exciting. And Jemisin is a terrific writer. Her dialogue is marvelous, or their dialogue is marvelous. And I've already signed up to get the entire series. So I'm very excited about Far Sector.
Mm-hmm. I love the art here.
Now, but is she a new character for the series? Because I'm not keeping up on my Green Lantern.
I've never seen her before. Okay, I believe she is completely new.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Right. Far Sector. Thank you, Cole. Nicole, what do you want to tell us about?
Well, in true fashion, I don't really read comics anymore, so I'm working my way through some manga that is just more like vignettes and short stories. And the one that speaks to my soul and understands me completely is Skullface Bookseller Hondo, Honda-san, which is a manga all about being a bookseller. And Honda-san works in the... Is this a specifically boys' love section? It seems like it.
Well, it's weird because isn't his... I think he's supposed to be in charge of the American comic section, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, later on in the book, they'll talk about some of that. But like he ends up dealing with the boys' love section a lot.
Yeah, it definitely starts off with the boys' love section. So it's just... It's a day in the life of a retailer, and it completely and totally nails it. It just happens to be in a Japan bookstore, but they get a lot of foreigners. They get these like weird Americans who's like, I like boobs. What are your boob comics or whatever? And it's just like, my favorite was like somebody was like, what's a good manga to read? And they were like, no, not a recommendation. And it's just like this. Yeah,
it's a full panic attack.
I mean, it's pretty much just like being a bookseller, but extreme in like an anime style. And everybody in this in the bookseller store has like either a skull face like Honda-san does, or like a bag with holes over their eyes, or mm-hmm. gas mask. It's just like these weird, they don't have like, you know, human faces. And it's something that was brought to my attention from Gabby and Sam, who were like, when I worked here at Dungeon, we would always like share all the different things that we loved. And like my love story was one thing that they put us onto, which was really lovely. And so it was just like, you should watch this thing. And I started watching the anime on Crunchyroll and I was like, oh God, oh, it's so real. It's so real. So it's just a lot of fun. And the different people that he has to come across and the different crisis of like, the shipment came early. Oh God. Ah, you know, and just, the perils of retail.
There's the sexy old American man.
Yeah.
And he needs to get something for his daughter. But it turns out that it's like porn.
It's like, like tentacle porn or something. Geez. It's like hentai.
And so Honda's just like, how do I tell them? How do I do the blah, 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 blah?
Yeah.
He's just like, we don't have it, sir. He's like, okay.
And then like, there's just like yaoi girls from overseas and like how crazy and thirsty, like, all these different women are for getting their boys' love and how particular they are. And like, there's this group of girls that come in and he was like, I've never seen anyone so proud to be in the BL section before. Damn, these bombshell babes, is that they're dying on my figures? Why are they blindingly bright? And it just looks like they're just like silhouettes with like evil smiling eyes. It's like, oh no, I need to help them quick. I need to find something here, muscle things. And they're like, oh my God, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it just brings me joy. I was trying to read earlier today because I realized I don't read comics anymore. And I was having trouble actually processing anything. Like I would read pages and just go, what? So then I picked this one up and started reading. And I was like, I'm actually retaining things. This is amazing. You're a miracle worker. So the second volume, I think, just came out or is about to come out.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely looking forward to continuing on. If I can actually get through this, then I will allow myself to buy the second volume. But stacks on stacks on stacks is my life right now. So.
Yeah.
Cool.
And actually, I didn't say who it was by. It says Honda. Is that like
I think that's his name.
Is it a somewhat sort of biography?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
He just that's why he kind of gives everybody the weird gas mask faces or penguin
that makes
face.
Sense. Yeah.
Plausible deniability.
That's right. That's right.
All his friends are like, am I the walrus?
Yeah.
Or am I the flamingo?
Some people's faces have been changed to protect their identities.
Indeed.
Am I bunny man? What?
There is a bunny man head.
Yep.
Yes, there is many things.
Right on.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. Skullface bookseller Honda-san.
Didn't think you'd be saying that tonight.
Did not. Well, it's never too late to say no.
That's
okay,
true.
Thank you, Nicole. And finally, Chris Casso, what do you got for us?
I read the new Image book by Jonathan Luna and Lauren Keeley. And so readers may remember Jonathan Luna as being part of the Luna Brothers, a band that broke up. I don't know. They don't work together anymore, but they did a lot of popular books for Image called Girls, Sword. And then at a certain point, Jonathan Joshua, I will never retain which is which. he started doing different projects and he started working with like Sarah Vaughan. They did a couple books. So this one is a first for two reasons. It's the first book he's ever done in black and white, and it's the first book that Lauren Keeley has ever scripted, I believe. And it's really solid, awesome first issue. His artwork has gotten tighter, cleaner, and the black and white really just brings it to the forefront. I used to always think that the coloring made their books because otherwise the figures were a little bland mm-hmm. and a little stiff. The stiffness doesn't quite feel like it's still him. It's still definitely his style, but it doesn't quite feel stiff anymore to me. And the story is basically taking place in the future. We don't quite know how far. And climate change has messed up everything. And it released a virus that may have been deep under the ice. And essentially, it has a 99% kill rate. And the 1% who survive come out with a variety of telekinetic abilities and also a huge social stigma where everybody thinks you're dangerous and you're a gang member. And so the main character is a young career woman who just got a promotion. And on the day she arrives to work to accept that promotion, she starts bleeding from her eyes and she is part of the 1% who survived. So now it's following her as she's dealing with trying to integrate into the society of the 1%ers who have survived, who basically they're like, oh, you were one of the ones that looked down on us, and now you're here in the dirt with us. And then the people who now look at from the above and see her as dirt. And then you also got this kind of extra ability part of the story going as well. So it's a very engaging sci-fi story about social status, class, and people getting the skin ripped off their flesh. Yikes. It's really great. So yeah, first issue, strong outing. Highly recommend it.
Is it ongoing or
should be ongoing? Okay. Most Luna projects tend to be like, I don't know, 3-year runs, 3 to 4 year runs, mm-hmm. something like that. They give you about 3 to 4 trades each time.
Okay.
So it'll keep on going as long as they can, I think.
How would you say the title of that?
I thought it was just 20XX. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because it's a, you know, it's just that unnamed future.
Yeah, unnamed, 2020?
Or 2020.
I don't think it's supposed to have a date.
No.
That's how I took it as. Okay. So it's like, you know, 2000 yeah. something in the future.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. It's like, how far is this dystopian future?
Right.
You know, right. Is it 2099?
We're or in the future now. So now we have to make the future more vague.
Yes.
20.
Question mark.
Or he could reveal something, or they could reveal something more interesting about that title as we go.
True. Oh. True.
Yeah. Yes, Cole.
Can you indulge me for just a couple of minutes here? I want to do an additional quick review.
Okay.
So a gentleman named John Freeman reached out to me a couple weeks ago because he had a new short piece called Frankungor that's part of the Alterna Comics anthology series called It Came Out on Wednesday. So he sent me a PDF, and it's super fun. It's Washington's illustrations are terrific, and if you're a kaiju fan, obviously it's Frankungor is a mashup of Frankenstein and King Kong, and it opens with a big knockdown dragout between Frankungor and a Godzilla
analog
named Najira, and then eventually Frankungor beats up Najira and then starts swimming away from the mainland and gets caught in a storm and then wakes up on whose island? Najira's island. But also, there's a reference to one of my favorite Japanese horror films called Matango, or Attack of the Mushroom People. Which, you know, Ben, we need to plan another movie night.
Jeez, we have so many in the queue
because you need to see Matango.
Attack of the Mushroom People.
Yeah, so...
Or as I like to call it, Super Mario Brothers.
Well,
I mean,
played.
This one actually has musical numbers in it and stuff. It's nuts. So... John was kind enough to reach out and respectfully ask that I share this work. And you can find Frankungor on learn more about Frankungor on their Facebook page. And I don't know much about Alterna Comics and that anthology series. Do you order that for the store?
Is it Alterna or is it? because two companies that sound exactly the
same. I thought
same.
It was Alterna. Alterna is the one that does the newsprints.
They're $1
that does
each,
the,
or $1.50.
In case you missed it, yeah. And things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't order. It came out on Wednesday. I have tried some Alternas, but they don't really do too much.
Okay.
There is a series that Alterna does that does do a thing called Blood Realm that's really cool. But a lot of them are like $1.50 to get a single issue. So they make it really affordable. They do it on this really cheap newsprint. And they're really flimsy, so they're not something that you would be condition sensitive about. But then they will usually do a trade or something that they call like Alterna Giants, I think, is a way that they do like kind of prestige bound
bundling. Sure. Well, it's clearly an effective labor of love by these two gentlemen, and I was really, I really appreciated John reaching out and sending me the PDF because it's super fun, and I would be more than happy to encourage people to pick it up. I'm looking at the Matango giant mushroom character right now, and it's just killing me.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
The art was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I would say that if you have a local comic book store, that you would specifically request it. To bring it in, because I think that those just have smaller runs coming into stores.
So, nice work, you guys. Keep it coming. I'm very excited for what you're going to do next.
All righty. Frank and Gore. Thank you, Cole.
Uh-huh.
Well, that is Bookport, and that is our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comic Extension here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicextension.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com, and our friends get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time this week. The questions come to us from me.
What?
We spoke about the new David Bowie biocomic, but here are five things that may or may not be included in the new title. All right, number one. And I actually, I may switch around how I do this. I have multiple choice for each one, but I think you might just even know them without me giving you the choice.
Is it going to be Bowie-licious?
It may be. Well, I'll do this. I'll say the question. If you don't get it, then I'll give you the choices.
Okay.
Number one, David Bowie isn't his real name. He had to change his name once he got into the music business to avoid any confusion with who?
Davy Jones of the Monkees.
Davy Jones of the Monkees. The other options could have been David Crosby of Crosby, Stills, and Nash, or Ricky Bowie of the Liverpool Nightmen. All right, those were your wrong answers. Number two, at the age of 17, he was interviewed on a BBC program as the founder of what?
David Jones and the Manish Boys?
No, it's not. It's not a rock group.
Is it of like a genre of music, kind of?
All right, I will tell you what they are. A, the Society for the Release of Dust Rabbits Under Derbyshire Couches. B, the Union of School Children Intent on Wearing Three Undershirts. Or C, the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Long-Haired Men.
Three.
It is. CD. He was the founder and interviewed on, you can find this on YouTube. All right, number three. The 1975 hit single Fame was co-written by who?
John Lennon.
It was John Lennon of the Beatles. The other options could have been Davy Jones of the Monkees or David Crosby of Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Those were the wrong answers. Number four. What Golden Age crooner recorded his last ever single with David Bowie?
Bing Crosby.
Bing Crosby with The Little Drummer Boy in 1977. And finally, number five. In June of 2016, just a few months after Bowie's passing, what sold for $18,750 at auction?
His eye patch?
No. All right, I'll give you these options. A, a collection of his fingernails.
Gross.
B, a lock of his hair. Or C, a jar of his belly button lint.
I think it was his hair, wasn't it?
It was a lock of his hair. All right, well, that is our show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.